The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today. She's the chair of the Election Integrity Alliance, former attorney to President Donald Trump, and we're delighted to welcome our special guest host, Jenna Ellis.
Welcome to America First. I am Jenna Ellis. This is already the third hour. I love radio so much because we can have these deep dive conversations and give you the tools to go out and fight for conservative values, principles, for America First policy, for the understanding of the Judeo-Christian worldview and how the truth of the infallible, inerrant word of God is the foundation of our society. Even people who don't believe in God are still benefiting, of course, from the recognition at our founding that our rights come from God, our creator, not our government. And the sole purpose of government is to preserve and protect those rights. We've gotten so far away from that central truth when we see this kind of bickering back and forth between the partisan political parties and all of that. And it's very interesting what the media is doing to combat against this whole America First agenda and the conservative principles. And so we've been talking in the last 2 hours. Definitely go back and watch on Rumble, on social media. Follow me at Jenna Ellis ESQ across social platforms until I get canceled. But follow me there. And we've been talking for the last 2 hours about this big tech lawsuit, why it's so important to fight back against censorship, why it's so important to protect our First Amendment freedoms. And really, it's our freedoms that come from God that our First Amendment obligates our government to preserve and protect, right? There's a difference. Even if our First Amendment were completely gone tomorrow because, you know, some crazy thing, we would still have the same rights because they come from God, our creator, not the First Amendment, right? So we need to understand all of these things in context. And what the media is doing is trying to shape the narrative so falsely and to push back against anyone who champions what our Constitution actually says and the principles of liberty in our declaration from which it was derived. So for the next few minutes, I'm going to talk with my next special guest, my good friend John Bachman. He, of course, is the wonderful Newsmax host from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. I'm a regular guest every Tuesday, sometimes Wednesday, sometimes Thursday, but definitely a regular guest with John Bachman on Newsmax. You can watch him from 12 to 2 every day. So, John, you and I were having a conversation just yesterday about the backlash against Alan Dershowitz simply for standing up for principles of liberty and freedom. And I find this so fascinating. Play cut 7.
The First Amendment doesn't only protect the speaker, Donald Trump. It protects you and me, the listener, the viewer. And what's happening now is big tech is depriving us, the American citizens, of the right to hear and see information, because if it's banned from the social media, we have no access to it. And that's why this is such an important case involving every citizen. And it's not only President Trump's been banned. I've been banned. I had a debate with Bobby Kennedy. Here you have two liberal Democrats debating. I debated in favor of more vigorous vaccination. He was more skeptical of vaccination. They took down the debate. They didn't like what he said, so they took down the debate. And they deprived the American public of the right to see a very thoughtful educational debate. And they're doing it more and more, and if they're not stopped, This will be the end of freedom of speech as we know it, because these companies now control the marketplace of ideas.
So this is Alan Dershowitz's opinion. He, of course, is a registered Democrat. But, John, the backlash against Alan Dershowitz for saying that this is the most important lawsuit in the 21st century was astounding.
Yeah, it's, you know, not only astounding, Jenna, and I'm sure from your perspective, you know, you have the law degree and the practice of law behind it. But from my perspective, watching, you know, the same people that once upon a time, you know, many moons ago that I, you know, kind of respected and admired, fall all over themselves to criticize him so quickly that there is no possible way they could even absorb the information that Professor Dershowitz was trying to explain. And the thing you have to appreciate about Alan Dershowitz is that he doesn't care if you like him or not. He has really a commitment, almost a religious commitment to the law, that he's going to tell you exactly how he believes the law should be applied, or how something applies to the law. And, you know, he comes from a different era where, you know, his objective is not to make people like him. His objective is to be right, basically, and to be consistent with his definition of the way things should be. And I find it fascinating that, you know, in this day and age, after everything he's done, defending O.J. Simpson, defending Mike Tyson, defending Michael Milken, that it's only now that, you know, he's getting laughed out of the room just simply because he has a very strong opinion about the First Amendment. Now, when it comes to these tech companies, you know, Jenna, they've told us for the last, you know, 10 years that their business model is to become the public square. And we've let them do that. And they've benefited greatly from this special protection where, you know, I think it was Facebook, for example, that allowed the New Zealand mosque shooter to live stream himself for like 9 minutes before they took it off. And it drove a lot of traffic, and that traffic drove a lot of advertisements. You know, that wasn't their objective, but they didn't stop it from happening, even though they were able to see the spike in traffic. And then they're not held responsible for that. And when you compare that to something like what happened during the Super Bowl, when I believe it was 2003 or four, when you had the notorious wardrobe malfunction. You know, I remember this because I worked at a local CVS affiliate in Augusta, Georgia, when it happened. And, you know, we were really concerned about how the fine was going to affect the bottom line of these stations. And in at the time, this is market 115. And if anybody has worked in local news in a small market, I mean, it's minor league stuff. It's a lot of young people, hardworking people, you know, trying to make their way, but the margins are thin. And, mm-hmm. you know, there was real concern about, and so you see the double standard here between something like that and what Facebook got away with when the mosque, New Zealand mosque massacre was happening, and they weren't able to stop it.
Yeah, and that's really now. That's really, John, I mean, that's what we've been talking about, you know, with Brooke Rollins from the America First Policy Institute, and then, you know, Harmeet Dhillon in the first hour, to say, you know, part of this argument is to say that a lot of these big tech companies are essentially state actors, because they have not only just the protections of government in a collusion sort of sense, or a cooperation, you know, talk about genuine collusion, not this whole, you know, Russia narrative. But then to say that, you know, they are benefiting from essentially being state actors, and they are infringing upon our constitutionally protected rights in a way that that is absolutely untenable. And it is an infringement. And, you know, when you're talking about somebody like Alan Dershowitz, who is giving a very lucid, informed legal opinion, people don't even want to talk about the merit of that opinion. It reminds me of, you know, the 2020 election. Nobody wanted to talk about the merit of what we were saying. They just wanted to attack and attack and attack President Trump. Me as an attorney, I mean, look at what they're doing to Rudy Giuliani, you know, some America's mayor, right, who has given so much to this country. They're literally trying to disbar him simply for representing a legal position, representing a client, and making arguments in the public square. This is absurd that we've gotten to this point in this country.
And this is something that's very important, something we've seen happen where, going back to, the impeachment, or, you know, you have junior or associate level attorneys working on defense cases, and they'll get threatened, you know, with doxing and things like that. You should not go after lawyers in this country. You know, there are a lot of jokes about how nobody likes a lawyer. But again, you're not.
They don't let nobody likes a lawyer until they need one. And nobody likes us until they need us. Yes,
exactly. And so, I mean, that's the whole thing is, like, you know, you got to go by. Lawyers are almost like umpires. They got to tell like it is. And you might not like them personally, but you need them to be consistent. And that's what I always look for when I'm always having somebody on, you know, to about a legal thing. That's what I like about you. I have Professor Dershowitz on. You guys understand what the Constitution is, and you're consistent, and I know what I'm getting in your legal analysis. And that's what's the most important. And that's the information that I want to convey to my audience on Newsmax. Mm-hmm. Consistency and the basic fundamentals of the Constitution. That's something that, you know, you're a conservative, Professor Dershowitz is a liberal, but you guys both always seem to find, you know, something that I agree with as the journalist, you know, in the middle as the foundation of what our Constitution is really supposed to be about.
Totally. And, you know, what I find really interesting as well about, you know, even though Alan Dershowitz and I, you know, we've been on many segments together, I've had him on, you know, prior radio programs of mine and so forth, is that at least we should agree that the rule of law prevails. And when you go into a judicial forum, those rules are fixed. They need to prevail. We can all make arguments. That's what advocacy is. But we all need to recognize and agree on the principles of the founding of America. And that's what I love about the law, is that consistency. We'll be right back with my special guest, John Bachman, who is the host on Newsmax 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Follow him now at John F. Bachman. We'll be right back on America First.
Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Now back to our guest host, Jenna Ellis.
Welcome to America First. This is one of my favorite songs. Again, I love the bumper music. This is on my Spotify playlist. It's awesome. We are talking about media credibility, the fundamental fairness, really, of what the game is all about. I mean, because we can debate politics, we can debate, all of these policy positions. But when we're talking about big tech censorship, when we're talking about treatment of President Trump in the media, when we're talking about censorship on social media and not even being able to express an opinion that goes against the grand narrative of the bureaucrats that be, this is something that is so ingrained in Americans that we understand justice. We understand meaningful appropriate justice. We understand fundamental fairness, and we understand that there have to be rules of the game. So I'm talking with my good friend John Bachman. Follow him now at John F. Bachman. He does not yet have a blue check. I don't know why. Hey, Jack, I know you're listening. You know, you should give John Bachman a blue check. But he's also the host of John Bachman Now from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. And John, you were talking in the break about, you know, one of the sports analogies that I always love, you know, in baseball, when we're talking about the rules of the game and we all understand that we can compete our hearts out. But at the end of the day, the rules of the game have to prevail, and the umpires should not be picking winners or losers. They should be enforcing the rules. And that's what we expect from an independent judiciary. We're not quite there. And I think that's what's really frustrating a lot of Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're never supposed to really talk about the officiating of a sporting event. When you are, you know, things usually aren't going well. They make a bad call. That's usually the only time you mention the umpire's name at a baseball game. And growing up, when I was playing baseball, I played catcher, and I played catcher at high school level and, you know, summer travel ball and things like that. And, you know, when you're playing catcher, you always have to work the umpire in the game. Every umpire has a strike zone that's a little bit different than the other one. And, you know, you always have to relay that information to the pitcher. And it all affects how you call the game. And so I always like to, you know, have a relationship with the umpire where I don't, you know, necessarily care if I like him or not. We don't have to be friends. But I need to know if he's consistent, if he's going to call certain pitches a certain way, and if he's going to be fair. And that's what mattered to me most. And it's the same thing. That's the same theory I apply to the people I have on my show. You know, are they fair? Are they honest? And, you know, are they in, you know, intellectually honest, and are they consistent? So, you know, that's why I have you on the show, Jenna. And,
Thank you.
You know, as it relates to the media, just, you know, you know, I went to journalism school at the University of Georgia. And what's amazing to me, you know, and granted, I work in, obviously, I have a perspective. I apply, you know, journalism.
We all do.
To what I do. But I am, you know, I'm, you know, open about my conservative perspective. But, you know, I every single day with NBC News, the traditional platforms that are supposed to be, you know, NBC News is broadcast network. It relies on the public airwaves to disseminate their message. But, you know, they had a story yesterday about Donald Trump's 2020 feet election defeat. In the wake of it, many QAnon followers have hatched a plan, run for the school board. I mean, they attach these labels like QAnon onto everyday Americans who simply, you know, might support Donald Trump or are new to the political process, or maybe not as, I guess educated in the world of politics. And I don't mean that, you know, in terms of street smarts or book smarts. I just mean how Washington works, quote unquote, as they like to say, the swampy ways. And they just continue to talk down to them. It is amazing to me to see the disrespect and the condescension to middle Americans and flyover country. And they continue to do it. And Jenna, we have this ongoing list of the stories that they have told us that were disinformation from Hunter's laptop, the Russian collusion, got two impeachments that went nowhere. All these stories that have been debunked over and over and again.
And this is why, John, you know, they don't. And this type of misinformation, I was glad to see Justices Thomas and Gorsuch, and we actually talked about this on your Newsmax show the other day about how they dissented in the Supreme Court declining a libel case that might have reevaluated the standard of New York Times versus Sullivan, that 1964 case that really set the bar very high for defamation against a public figure. And they said, you know, we may need to reevaluate this because of the consistent misinformation that is so prolific now across not just social media, but also the mainstream media, these legacy media. And that is not fair. I mean, we can all have our opinions, but opinion is very different from fact. And what I can't stand, John, about so many of these legacy media is they will put out something that may technically be a fact, but they will characterize it in a way that's it's a half truth. And it's they're wanting to lead you in a direction that is so false. And President Trump, one of the greatest things that he did throughout his administration was call the fake news media for what they are. They're activists. They're not journalists. They're not reporters. And let's play cut four.
I was informed that there are record numbers of murders took place this weekend. Record numbers. They don't even talk about it on NBC and CBS and ABC and NPR. They don't talk about it. And it's a big story. That's why the credibility of the mainstream media is the lowest it's ever been. Lowest it's ever been. And, you know, I hate to take credit for this, but I'm very proud of the fact that I exposed them for what they are. They are terrible, terrible representatives of our country.
We love giving him credit for that, John, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, the other thing, too, what you were saying about the Supreme Court case, I was really bummed that they didn't take it up because it would have given me an opportunity on my show to play B-roll from the movie War Dogs. And if nobody's seen it, it is a great movie to watch. But that Supreme Court case involved a book of which that movie was based on. And you're right. Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch said the court should have taken up the case because in that book, the former prime minister of Albania had sued the author of the book, which is called Arms and Dudes, Three Stoners from Miami Beach Became the Most Unlikely Gunrunners in History. That's the name of the book. But he sued them because there was a portrayal of this prime minister that he was, like, corrupt. And the portrayal of the prime minister in the book in the movie became part of the story in the mainstream media. And the prime minister really wasn't portrayed fairly. And what the lower courts basically said was that, you know, because he was a public figure in Albania, the prime minister, he had a higher standard to prove that he wasn't corrupt. And that the fact
isn't that insane.
Book, you know, I know. And,
yeah.
You know, that's what Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch said. Look, I mean, you know, public figures traditionally have had an opportunity that other people haven't, where they've had, you know, they can go on TV or radio. But the media is so saturated now that those lies can get picked up and spread around the world. So, you
yeah,
know, that's
it's amazing, John.
Sullivan.
Yeah. It's amazing what I have read and learned about myself on the internet that I never knew, because, you know, that's what all of this prolific stuff that people just put out there and then other people read about public figures and they just assume it's true. And it's insane. And I think you're absolutely right that this needs to be revisited. This whole actual malice standard may be a bit too high for our disinformation, misinformation age. And John F. Bachman, follow him now on Twitter. He is the host of John Bachman Now on Newsmax from 12 to 2 Eastern. We will be right back here on America First. I'm Jenna Ellis.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America First.
Welcome to America First. I'm Jenna Ellis. Thanks so much for sticking with us for the 3 hours today. I'm filling in for my good friend Sebastian Gorka, who is also on the board with me of the Election Integrity Alliance. Go and follow us, sign up for all of the news alerts about what our allies are doing to protect election integrity across the country. And you can go to AmericanGreatnessFund.com. That's AmericanGreatnessFund.com. Follow us on social media before we get canceled. I'm at Jenna Ellis ESQ. But my next guest, even more importantly, is at Libertarian Blue. He tells me that he might have to change that handle. But we were actually on a Newsmax segment together just a couple of days ago talking about big tech, talking about this lawsuit. And I had to bring him on so that you could hear what he has to say, because I found it a really fascinating perspective. So, Alim Bakari, thank you so much for joining me today. You are investigating big tech for Breitbart News. And what is your perspective from the big tech world about this particular issue and moving forward from conservative values in the marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, this issue has been going on for a long time. I've been covering it since its early beginnings in 2015, when tech censorship was just getting started, and when Twitter and Facebook and YouTube still claimed to be open platforms that supported free expression. And it's accelerated so much in the years since Trump was elected in 2016. And, you know, they went after his supporters first, and then eventually they went after him. And it's a real shame that Republicans didn't take their opportunity when they had control of the White House and control of the Senate and the House to fix this problem, to fix some of the laws that allow it to happen.
Hmm.
And it's important to remember that, like, these companies owe their position in the marketplace and their vast powers to censor people to, like, laws that Congress passed in the 1990s.
Yeah, and I find that fascinating. I mean, what's your perspective on why Republicans didn't do that? I mean, I think a lot of us are not. I'm certainly not a fan of Paul Ryan. I think he handled that very terribly as a speaker, and that was one of the worst things that he did in terms of not advancing true America First policies that are championing conservative values. He was actually one of those the wrenches in the system when they had that opportunity. But was it just because, in your opinion, you know, that Republicans just didn't see it as much of a threat as it is now, or did they actively just not want to do anything?
I think they certainly underestimated the threat. It's also a very complicated issue. And, you know, without naming names, many, many people in Congress are completely clueless when it comes to all aspects of technology and, you know, sort of rely heavily on their staffers for like any level of, you know, technological expertise. But, I will say, you know, Republicans have had an aversion to using the power of the state and using the power of laws in a smart way. They've had this laissez-faire free market attitude to everything long after, you know, all of corporate America has turned against them and gone left-wing and gone woke and censored them. And, you know, increasingly we're seeing Republicans start to realize that, but they didn't realize that back in 2016 and 2017. And, I need to update my Twitter handle probably for that reason. I haven't been a libertarian for many, many years.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I find that fascinating as well. Some of this, as you said, you know, the laissez-faire sort of stuff that is contrasted against, and that philosophy that's contrasted against conservatism, and making sure that, you know, that conservatives do recognize that one of the tools that we have at our disposal that we've been talking about through the last couple of hours is that litigation can actually clarify the law in a good way if legislation fails, or if Congress refuses, or if the states refuse. And so this is a really fascinating issue. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned as well, Alam, is that so many of our, older, different generation congressmen and women and Congress members don't use social media as much. And I wonder if that not just hesitation, but frankly, ignorance of big tech will also be reflected in the judiciary. Because, I've clerked for judges who, you know, refuse to even get online for some of their cases. They had to use paper files because that's the traditional method. And so do you think that we're going to see that attitude reflected in the judiciary?
That'll be interesting to see. I mean, there have been censorship cases that have come before the courts before, and they've always been shot down on either First Amendment grounds, because, you know, the tech companies argue that they have First Amendment rights as corporations to, you know, carry whatever views or censor whatever views they want, or on the grounds of Section 230, which is that 1990s law that gives them, you know, these wide legal liability shields for both hosting content and for taking it down. Now, the Trump case is interesting because it argues that Twitter and Facebook colluded with the state because they were taking advice on censorship from the CDC.
And we'll pause there for a moment. We'll pause for a moment. We'll be right back with my good friend at Libertarian Blue when we come right back on America First.
News and talk radio is still really popular, even in the internet age. What you are about to hear them say is mind-boggling.
Here's looking at you, Snowflake. America First.
Welcome back to America First. I'm Jenna Ellis, sitting in for my good friend Sebastian Gorka, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, and my guest. We are talking about big tech censorship and Alam Bakari, who is investigating big tech for Breitbart News. You can follow him at Libertarian Blue until he updates that handle, but follow him now so that you know where to find him. And Alam, you know, we were talking in the break about kind of bringing this back to a more overview perspective of where are we headed now with all of the big tech censorship. Obviously, Americans in our gut, how we are raised, how we understand America First principles are fundamental fairness, the opportunity to have freedom of speech, to exercise our rights. And so as this becomes a bigger and bigger issue, where do you see this heading, and how can American patriots get involved in the fight to protect our First Amendment freedoms?
Well, there's a lot of focus on the political side of things, which, you know, how tech censorship affects politics. And this is a subject increasingly of international concern. After Donald Trump was banned on all of those platforms back in January, you saw the president of Mexico, politicians in Australia, Germany, France, the UK, all expressing great concern about this, even if they didn't share Trump's politics, because they recognize the level of political interference that is when tech companies deplatform a world leader like that. But I also want to get to the fundamental fairness question, because that isn't discussed enough because there's so much focus on the political. But, you know, these platforms have been around in some cases for half a decade or even an entire decade. So some people have spent, you know, an entire decade of their lives building up their presence on these platforms. It's an important part of their lives, their social lives, their livelihood. Some people base their entire business around their presence on Facebook or YouTube or Instagram. So for the people like that to be in a position where the tech companies are going to take it all away instantly and they have no due process, that's a basic question of fairness that goes beyond any partisan political considerations, in my view.
Absolutely. And I think that the law does and should reflect that in this arena, because when you're talking about, you know, any sort of other business enterprise, when you're talking about, you know, even landlord-tenant law, when you're talking about, you know, protections in the marketplace and protecting the little guy and the entrepreneur and the individual and all of those different protections in any other arena, that should mirror also these types of platforms. And it's been interesting to me from a legal perspective to see that big tech on one hand claims that they are not a public utility in that sense, but then they're also claiming that they're not the arbiters of truth and that are not just out there willy-nilly arbitrarily silencing and suppressing speech. But the average American, you don't have to be a lawyer, you don't have to be an expert in big tech, you don't even have to be on social media to know that that's happening. And that's what is frustrating, I think, to all of us who, you know, if Twitter right now banned Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, I would be against that, because do I agree with what Joe Biden says? No, you know, 99% of the time, probably. But I want to hear from him. I want to know what he's saying. And so to have this sort of viewpoint discrimination that is so clearly against conservatives in one particular viewpoint on any given issue, whether you're talking about COVID, whether you're talking about, you know, conservative principles, President Trump or what have you, when you see that that is not fair, then that's where I wish that the liberals would step in and say, wait a minute, like these other foreign leaders, we might be next.
Yeah, and it also creates a massive chilling effect, because even the people who still, you know, the conservatives and the right wingers who still have their social media accounts, you know, they're dropping like flies. I mean, Nick Fuentes was banned just today on Twitter, I think.
Yes.
But even the ones who still have their accounts, there are probably things they feel they can't say, or they, you know, they reduce the number of posts they make on a given day because they're worried about getting banned. So, and the left doesn't experience that. They can say almost anything they want. A recent example, last week, there was a director of a civil rights organization in British Columbia, Canada, who tweeted, quote unquote, "burn it all down," in response to a story about an epidemic of church arson attacks in Canada. And she still has a Twitter account. So this just shows you, like, you know, the left just doesn't experience this level of censorship, and they also don't experience the chilling effect. You know, someone on the left feels they can tweet out essentially a glorification of arson, and, you know, they won't be at risk of censorship.
Right. And yet, you know, if we just tweet out something like, you know, hey, look, I have a Lego set of the U.S. Capitol, then, you know, oh, no, you're an insurrectionist. The FBI is going to be knocking at your door. I mean, that type of hypocrisy, but also that type of arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement of these rules is so obviously biased. And that's what's really frustrating. And I find it interesting, you know, when I was talking to some of the attorneys earlier on in this program, they're not really attacking the terms and conditions and that sort of discriminatory enforcement as much as they are just the overall civil rights issue at play. But I think it's interesting to look at how these terms and conditions, I mean, you know, I don't read them. I mean, there was a, I don't, disclaimer, I don't watch South Park, but I know about, I'm from Colorado and I know about the show, but, you know, there was a great South Park episode about the terms and conditions. Everybody just scrolls down to the bottom and they click accept and you have no idea what you're signing. And yet that gives big tech the ability to then just say, oh, well, this is against our standards. Nobody knows what that means. Isn't that something though, that we should be fighting?
I think it should be. I like that you brought up landlords and tenants earlier. That's an example that I've used in the past as well, because, you know, you could be, you know, renting a crappy $800 a month studio in the worst part of town, and you'd have more rights than you do over an Instagram account with a million followers, a Facebook account with a million followers that might be bringing in, you know, tens of thousands in revenue a month. And, you know, that's an insane position for business owners to be in and for, you know, ordinary citizens to be in. You know, this also goes to, you know, the question of asymmetric power in America. The left has its claws in every single major power center in the country, whether that's the federal government, the judiciary, and now corporate America as well, the most powerful corporations of which are, of course, the tech giants. And right. As long as that persists, the double standards will persist.
Yes. And so this is such a multifaceted issue. And Alon Bakari, I really appreciate your analysis. And you'll have to join me on my show on Real America's Voice, Just the Truth, soon. That's every weeknight at 6 p.m. Eastern. But follow Alon Bakari right now at Libertarian Blue on Twitter. Also, all of his writings on Breitbart News. And join me for the last segment already here on America First. I'm Jenna Ellis. We'll be right back. Welcome back to America First. I'm Jenna Ellis. It has been such a privilege to be with you for this 3 hours. And, you know, maybe I just won't let Seb come back. He's supposed to be back Monday, but who knows? Maybe you'll just get me and we'll be like, hey, stay on vacation, my friend. So, no, we love Seb around here and I really appreciate it. Also forgot to mention, so want to make sure that you know that my friend Alon Bakari, who was with me the last two segments, he has a great book called Hashtag Deleted, Big Tech's Battle to Erase the Trump Movement and Steal the Election. Go find that wherever books are sold. And, you know, continue to speak up, my friends. We have to make sure that we are bold, that we are courageous, and that we just stand firm in the truth. And that's what I try to do each and every day. And you all know that I am a conservative Christian and that I'm a Christian first. And that means that every day I wake up and say, what does God have for me today? And it doesn't matter what anyone else says, the lies that they spread, the hate that they spread, the, you know, tweets that they respond to. I don't care. Why? Because I serve my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And that is ultimately what matters. And because of that, I also am proud to be an American, because I am so privileged to live in this great country where, for the first time in world history, our founders recognized the truth of the Word of God and that God himself endows us with our rights. And because of that, we have the ability to speak together about truth and to discuss all of these things and to understand what it means to be a Christian in the 21st century, what it means to understand how to raise our families, how to participate in the free marketplace of ideas. We all have to answer at the end of the day. We all have to answer the question, who do we say that Jesus is? That is the most important question. And if we aren't able to have the conversation and to debate and discuss all of these things, then that ultimately is foreclosing our ability to be the best informed about truth and about the things of God and to raise our children according to truth and to participate in our businesses in the free marketplace according to truth. And that's why religious liberty is so important, that the government isn't compelling you or me to participate in a Christian church or go to a Muslim mosque. No, we get to decide and answer for ourselves. Who do we say that Jesus Christ is? Do you believe that he is your Lord and Savior? And the government is not going to compel you to answer that question a certain way. Neither is God himself. It is your choice. And that choice is all about what religious liberty is about. And so make sure that you are speaking up in the marketplace, that you are in your Bible every day, that you are reading the truth for yourself. And to help you discern all of these things, join me on my show on Real America's Voice. It's called Just the Truth, where we talk about all these things. Follow me at Jenna Ellis ESQ. Join the Election Integrity Alliance, AmericanGreatnessFund.com. But definitely, definitely, definitely stay frosty. I'm Jenna Ellis. It was great to be with you here on America First. You'll see Sebastian on Monday.